Hey, it's Brie Bagwell with your Only Fans recap. And my friend Brian Keene is, in addition to one of the nicest humans, an incredible singer-songwriter and now creator of the new app Playola. In this episode, we talk a lot about Playola, but since we've recorded this episode, the app is now open and public and available to everyone. So please download the app and listen to my station, Band, B-A-N-N-E-D, Radio. There are other incredible stations too, but mine's really great. I basically tell you the stories behind my songs, and I curate the best songs that I know you will enjoy. The feedback so far on the app has been truly amazing. Brian has written some giant hits you'd recognize, like William Clark Green's She Likes the Beatles and Adam Hood and Josh Abbott's All Sing About Mine. He's married to my producer extraordinaire, Rachel Loy, and he also played keyboard for Randy Rogers for a stint. He really understands both the good and the bad of both Texas and Nashville music scenes through both his and Rachel's experiences in the music business. And he clearly can use both sides of his brain seamlessly. So, Brian, thanks for coding Playola, but we are so ready for your new record. Enjoy. Hey, y'all, it's Brie Bagwell. I want to invite you to join me August 12th through 16th in Red River, New Mexico for 8750 Music Festival. This boutique festival features 4 days and four nights of outstanding musical performances across five venues and includes a barbecue cook-off and a red and a green chili cook-off. 3 day passes are on sale now, and your ticket gets you into every show of the festival and includes two free meals. You can get tickets, sign up to compete in the cook-off, and learn more at 8750festival.com. That's 8750festival.com. And use coupon OnlyVans, that's OnlyVans, all caps, no space at checkout to get $10 off your 3 day pass. 8750 Festival, adjust your altitude. By the way, me and producer Kyle, we're both playing at the festival, so you can come see us there.
Did you ever think that She Likes the Beatles would be like the biggest? Like, it is like, I went and saw Will the other day. It's like the biggest freaking song.
I knew it was really good.
Yeah.
I knew it was really good as soon as we finished it.
Hey, hey, everybody. This is Brie Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
Check, check. How do we sound? You know what it's like being on the road all the time
Yeah.
and getting the free everything all the time?
Yeah. We're not going to pay you, but we're going to give you free alcohol.
Can I have the cash option? Like, what are... Yeah. How much do you miss the white van days driving through the night?
I miss 90 minutes.
That's right.
A day. And that's all.
That's... exactly how I feel. It's the only easy part of being on the road is the time that I'm on stage and people say, you look so happy on stage. It's like, because I am.
Yeah.
The rest of it. I mean, even the tires and the van maintenance and the, it is so hard and it hasn't gotten, I'm just letting you know, it hasn't gotten any easier.
I believe it. I believe it.
When you started your own thing in the Texas scene, what year are we talking here?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. Was that like 20?
Because on Spotify your records say 2017.
Oh, do they?
Because I think that's when you like re
I must have uploaded them or
whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Because I was trying to go see, you know, when 90 Miles an Hour came out, and because we used to listen back in the day, we used to listen to that song and all your records. We used to jam it all the time. And I was like, what year was that? And I was looking, I'm like, well, it wasn't 2017.
I should know. I mean, yeah, no. It wasn't 2017. It was, gosh, because it has to be before any of my kids were born. So it had to be like 2011.
2011 was when I started with Nick Ferrata. We had that booking agent in common for a little while.
Yes.
I saw him the other day.
Oh no, how's he doing?
He's doing great. So
what? I mean, that guy was a force.
He was a curator of really, or he had an eye. I'm like, he had an eye for really good talent.
He
I'm like
did.
Looping myself in there. But we went to see Cody Johnson play at the rodeo for 80,000 people. He asked Paul Eason to play guitar.
Oh, awesome.
So Paul got to play at the Houston Rodeo, and Nick was there because Nick booked you, me, Cody, William Clark Green, Scooter Braun, Jody Booth, Josh Ward. I mean, the booking agency talent at that time.
Yeah.
That was wild that he even had that foresight. And now he got to go watch Cody Johnson play at the rodeo. So that was pretty crazy.
That's super cool.
He's doing great now. He's smart. He's in construction. He builds like really high end homes. So
that doesn't surprise me. I figured he would just, you know, be awesome at whatever he tries.
Yeah. He was like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. I get that too.
I get that too. And now you get to do, in my opinion, are you doing music? Like, is it fun for you now? Like you get to do it for fun?
Yeah.
Tell me, okay, start at the beginning. What's that like?
I mean, it was weird. Like, it was weird for a long time. I remember when I quit the road.
Say it. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to. But was it a specific moment? I don't remember this, and I don't remember.
It basically just started getting boring. We had kids and I just remember it wasn't conscious, but I would leave and not just, it wasn't like I was like, oh, I got to get back to the kids who are keeping us up all night and all that. But it was just like, I just didn't care about being there as much. And also I kind of played every size room and everything. Cause I played with Randy. So I played like giant places and tiny dive bars and everywhere. And it was just, I just got bored with it, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Right. You've done everything. You play keys for Randy Rogers. But you're such a great songwriter. Like you're one of my favorite songwriters. I talk about it all the time and you'll sit on a floor with me and Rachel and tear apart a song and put it back together. And I think of my records and how you probably didn't get enough songwriting credit, which, you know,
no,
but
I would say too much songwriting credit. We've,
fix a song.
What would I love. That's one of my favorite things to do. And when specifically with you, because it's like the songs are already so good and it's like, you know, sometimes we can't take it like up a level, but it's such a challenge to take it up a level. And then it's so satisfying when it does go up a level. It's just, and to come at it with just fresh eyes. Cause you're in it. Like you're like, it's hard to know at that point whether it's, you know,
Rachel
but
and
also,
I, when we get stuck, we're like, Brian, I remember this last piece.
I remember us doing that with like all the songs on a record for you. And then me and Rachel talking about it and saying like, well, we just have to make sure, because you came in with 99% of the record written and then we helped with that 1%. And then we were like, we got to make sure that we don't get credit on like all of the songs, because that actually wouldn't be representative of what we did. Cause you really like, you come in with the songs and we're doing like, it might be writing, it might be producing, it's kind of pre-production, but it's not, it's just like the last little bit, but it's so satisfying.
Yeah. That's, you and Rachel both do that where it's like, it's mostly you. We just hear, and I'm over here like, that's not true. But thank you for saying that. It's really fun. But that's like the value that I place so much. And, you know, as a songwriter, someone like you, you can come in and the song is ready to go. I'm more of quantity. And then we kind of like polish them up. And it's fun that you like to do that, because I can't come into a song midway through and see what's wrong with it, and or even 75% of the way through. And like, but you have that ability and you enjoy that.
I really love that. I find the rest of it really difficult. The coming up with what to write about. Huh. The song game was torturous for me. I mean, it was also amazing and changed my life, but
torturous. That's so interesting.
Oh yeah. 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 Every, like just trying to figure out what to write and then sitting down and just squeezing it out. That's really difficult for me.
Coming from someone who writes code, you saying something as torturous is like hilarious to me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, that seems like really tedious.
You know, it's like, it's just different and there's no emotional attachment. Like a song you want to get right because you want like the feeling that you had to get to everybody else. And code is just, does it work or does it not work? And
interesting. Well, that is kind of how I feel about a to-do list, where I love to scratch things off, because with music, you never really scratch anything off.
Yeah.
And that's why the idea of like a side hustle or another job or whatever is so enticing to me. And that's why it's so exciting. Because it's like you can get up and you can do see what you need to do, and then you can do it and you can scratch it off, and then you get money for it. Where like music, it's like you can create a record, and like Rachel and I were talking about, like, does it, it might not, you feel like it doesn't matter in a week, which isn't true, but that's how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
It's so emotionally difficult or something. So maybe that's why you, that part of your brain, I don't know.
No, for sure. It gives you all this freedom. Like I remember we, I mean, I definitely felt like I lost my identity when I quit touring. For that was weird. I remember writing on like going to the doctor after I quit the road and not knowing what to write on the thing where it says, what do you do for a living? And I was like, well, crap. Like I just felt that was really depressing.
Interesting.
But then but then I was writing more and playing more than I was when I was on the road, because I never had time to play or write. Right. When I was touring, it was like, be time to write a record. I'd be like, oh shit, okay, let's figure this out. I remember writing half of my last record in the back of the van between shows. Like I'd send the band would go in and have dinner or something, and I'd go sit in the van and write the rest of the songs. Like it was,
I cannot do that. Like even getting my guitar out of the bar back to the RV to like write a song feels like impossible. It is very hard, and carving out time creatively, I feel a little bit fraudstery right now, because we haven't had the song game, which, if you don't know what that is where you write a song every week or 2 weeks based on a prompt, and Rachel and Brian, like, you guys got me into the song game, and I did for years. I wrote every week or 2 weeks I wrote a song, and now I feel like since I have no accountability, I haven't written anything, because you do carve out time for it, and it is torturous for me too. So I'm glad that you said that, because I don't enjoy the I always say it's like working out. It's like I enjoy it when it's done, but I'm not like, yeah, I love to song write.
Totally. I love having written the song. Yeah, and I love having a new song to play.
Right.
But the process of writing it, I have never been crazy about it.
Interesting. How do you feel about co-writing? Because when I was in Nashville, sometimes I would just be like, I would wake up and I would just dread having to go co-write with somebody I didn't know. But
totally.
You feel that too?
Oh yeah. It's mentally exhausting. Like I get way more exhausted after a day of doing that than I do a day of coding on this.
Interesting. Did you, I keep saying interesting, like I'm in a science experiment. Did you ever have a publishing deal?
No. I wanted one bad. Cause I had all these crappy side jobs all the way up. I was a bartender. I was a flipped cars for a while. I was a mechanic. I worked in a shop in Austin. I was just everything. And I remember just being super broke in Nashville. And when they kind of flirt with you and they're like, oh yeah, we're totally gonna sign you, just write with just do these three co-writes a week for a month and then we'll talk, and then you do that, and
they didn't say yes. That's so okay. Well, this is for anyone listening. If you don't have a pub deal or you haven't had one, like, and Brian Keenan have one, like, you're fine. That doesn't mean any. And then, you know, I'd never co-written a song and they gave me one because they thought I was going to be a big star, and then admitted to never listening to my song. So it's like, what is the
really?
Game? Yes. I didn't tell you this?
No. Yeah. You got to hear about this.
My publisher was out on the town and told my friend Dave Finley, I didn't even listen to Bree's songs. We just thought she was going to get a big record deal and get famous. Like, told, and Dave called, and he was really upset for me. And I was really upset for me because I was kind of killing myself. And then, of course, now looking back, I'm like, well, of course. Like, they gave me a publishing deal and I'd never even written a song with anybody before. Like, I didn't deserve it.
But they weren't even listening.
They weren't even listening.
But so then, how would they know?
I know.
Oh.
It still makes me angry. So, but that's just another point of why the whole system in Nashville is like sometimes very backwards.
Oh, completely backwards. Yeah. Well, I just remember because I was touring every weekend and then I'd fly up and write in Nashville, and everybody I wrote with had a publishing deal for the most part. And I remember, I just remember the songs that the publishers liked and the songs that the audiences liked being completely different. It was like,
right,
you're either writing for the gatekeepers or for the audience, and never for both. I mean, almost, I don't think I've ever written a song that both liked.
Well, until it gets famous, and then they're like, oh yeah, and you're like, I called it all along. It's like, no, you didn't. You wouldn't even let me write ballads. And here comes Chris Stapleton or whatever, and you're like, oh, I knew it. It's like,
oh,
didn't.
Totally. Or Miranda, house that built me. Like,
right.
About the thing that cracked me up was them all being like, oh, like an acoustic song will never work. And then as soon as she hits that song, they like all want one like it. And it's like, no. No, it has nothing to do with it being an acoustic.
You told me
song.
I was not allowed to do this. I know, wild. I was going back and forth every week to Nashville, and just that travel was exhausting, and being on the road is exhausting. And I think I was just kind of failing at both, but ha-ha to them, because you've had a lot of success co-writing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I mean, we can talk about some of your I know them all, but anyone listening that doesn't know about all your successful co-writes, I thought that I had to tell you that you've made it totally as a songwriter, because the other night I was in at a festival, and this guy next to me, his name's Dave Thomas, he was playing guitar and singing, and he was singing, I like her bobbers and she likes my pole. So you have a parody. You've yes. made it so... How... Did you ever think that She Likes the Beatles would be like the biggest, like it is like, I went saw Will the other day. It's like the biggest freaking song.
I knew it was really good.
Yeah.
I knew it was really good as soon as we finished it.
Yeah.
Like, I was excited about it as soon as we finished it. Yeah. And hearing the band play it and playing on the record with them on it. That was... It was magical experience. The whole thing was...
The production had to be like... The production just nailed it, though. Like, solidified that's such a great job.
I totally agree. She's pretty good.
Your hot wife produced those records. And the William Clark Green... How many Will Clark cuts do you have now? Don't you have a few?
No, just the one.
Just one?
Just the one, yeah.
Huh.
We've been trying to get together. We've got together a couple times. I think that one we kind of wrote over email, like, and I think that worked really well for us.
You write over email this whole time? We've never wrote over email.
We should totally write over email.
Because we can't seem to make it work in person.
I love it. I love it. I love it. He sent me the chorus or a lot of the, he sent me all the music to the chorus and most of the words to the chorus. And then I wrote a verse, and then I wrote that bridge, and then I sent it back to him and said, hey, we need like a funny verse here, and we need another one here. And he wrote some really funny stuff. And then we got together and finished it out together.
And wow.
It was, you know, that whole record was really magical.
The whole record. And then, I mean, I remember even, I guess, was it the Rose Queen record or the one before? Was the Rose Queen the first one you did with Will? Yeah. That was the record where I called him and I said, who produced this record? And he was like, Rachel Loy. And I was like, I want her to produce my records now. That's so exciting.
I am so glad.
I know.
I'm so glad.
And I was like, a woman? Ugh. No, I'm just kidding. I was like, of course it is. It's someone who's brilliant and just all around great. And you kind of get Brian Keene like looped. When you work with Rachel, you accidentally get Brian Keene occasionally coming in. And if you could have told young Brie Bagwell that, she'd be sitting on the floor writing songs with Brian Keene and Rachel Lori. She would have been like, what?
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm serious. Remember, I met y'all in Nashville in like 2011. I was up there with Nick. Maybe I met you before that, but we were in Nashville. I played the Billy Block show.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember this?
No, I absolutely remember that at that venue that's gone now.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah. And then Rachel played too.
Set.
Y'all played. Anyway, and I was sitting there watching her with you, and I was like, she is amazing. And you were just like, stars in your eyes, like, she is amazing. And I was like, I want someone to look at me the way that Brian Keene looks at Rachel Loy. That's how...
I think you got there.
Well, it took me forever, though. I did get there, but it took me a long time. Let's talk about I'll Sing About Mine. You continue.
Well, I remember the first time we met was at the Lamberts before, but Rachel wasn't there. And I remember you played that, I Want to Be Your Whiskey song on the piano.
Yeah.
And I was, that's when I was sold. I was, remember I went back and I told Rachel, like, you gotta hear this girl.
Cool. Like, I'm re-recording that.
Oh, it's such a great song.
I just told Rachel, I'm re-recording that. And we chopped it in half. I mean, it was so, it's like 5 minutes long. Like, I didn't know anything about, I wrote it when I was 18 years old. I didn't know anything about writing songs.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I miss those days. And I miss, you know, when you listen to your old records before you were writing for, you know, this has to be 3 minutes long and is it commercial enough and can my band play it or like what, you know, all the things that creep into our heads or if I release it, is no one going to care? Or like, can I sing this live every night or whatever? Anyway, I was just writing songs because I liked to write songs and that I miss that feeling a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have some of that back.
That's what I was hoping that you would say.
For sure.
Where
for sure.
You just can write without thinking about anything else. Like I don't do that anymore and I don't know what that would look like and feel like.
Nothing has to be a hit for me anymore and so that makes it real free.
But didn't you record, have you released the record that you recorded that I got to hear a little bit of?
I haven't. I mean, you
I
know,
hate to
it's like what we're talking
you.
About. It's like
I love that song.
It's all in the can. It's just got to be mixed. But every time $600 for mixing a song comes up, it's like, well, am I going to do that and just throw it out there and absolutely not make it back, even if it's successful? Or am I going to, you know, fix the plumbing?
Right. And that's what we just talked to Rachel about, which is like how strange the music landscape is where we're sitting, you're sitting on songs, she's sitting on songs, I'm sitting on songs. We're literally sitting on art because we're like, what's the point?
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Howdy, y'all. It's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays, and my whole family was like, obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellenbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellum Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you.
Like, yeah. That's a little bit sad.
It's totally sad.
Yeah, I don't know why I said a little bit. It's like a lot sad.
No,
it's... Because that record is so... I mean, I Rachel played me some of it and I was like, this is so good.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that was a magical record. I had a lot of fun making that record. I just don't have the money to finish it or to mix it.
Right, because it's not like we're poor. That's the thing. Like, I'm always like, it's not like we need $600. No, we need $100,000 to make this.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't, you can get it mixed unless, if you're trying to cut through nowadays in the musical landscape, it's literally like $100,000 is what you need to hire the team and pay to get it through social media. And like, and if I have $600, I'm going to go print a run of t-shirts. That's going to make me $2,000. Then
yeah.
I am going to put it into music. That's never going to pay me back $600 for just the mixing.
No, they just took all that money away from us.
They took it away from us. And I, can you, if you could recreate the, when you did your playlist speech, you were like, this is the things that Nashville took away from us. And I was like in the front row, like tears in my eyes. I wasn't expecting you to put it into like a PowerPoint presentation of everything that has been. Anyway,
I felt
you
incredibly douchey doing a little PowerPoint presentation.
It wasn't PowerPoint.
It was, I mean, it was like, but it was necessary.
But the way that you explained the revenues and Nashville versus independent and how they have kind of intercepted themselves in there. Can you say that part?
Sure.
Do you need your PowerPoint?
I think maybe now I could do it.
Okay.
It. I would say for me, my whole musical career was doing well, having success, and then finding some alternative way to make money because they'd already taken away the money that you get from that success. And then, you know, at first it was like, all my friends were getting TV commercials, but then that went all, you know, taken over by the majors. Then it was, what else? There was
like beers. I just think about beer sponsorships and stuff like that too.
Totally, totally. And now, like record deals, they take a percentage of that sponsorship,
or they give them to influencers that are not musicians. So anyway,
continue. Yeah, no, totally. It's like all of these forms of revenue get taken away, and the biggest example for me is how the labels talk about how, well, Napster happened, and then all of the money went away. And that's half true. It went away, and when it was gone, they renegotiated all the flows of cash so that so that they get to keep it. It goes straight to the people in suits now and away from anybody that's creating something. And so the idea of the Playola, this app that we're working on, is sort of to just grab the money that's left over from FM radio and give as much of it as we can to artists. That's kind of the whole thing.
That's so lovely. I was trying to explain it to Paul. I was like, it's like there's money coming down the slide and they just come in and go, whoop, and then they get it. And then we kind of figure out how to get around and they're like, whoop, here they come. Like you can never quite get it. And it's so frustrating. And then we're always having to pivot and learn. And I just, there was so much about living in Nashville that was hard for me, but you know, whenever I would go there, I would always be talking to somebody that I felt like couldn't even play a chord on guitar. That was like, well, here's what you need to do. And I just got so exhausted of that because the only way I knew how to make real money was to be touring on the road. And that's still kind of what it is. But it's very frustrating because it's like, even though I go back, it's like, well, you never got outside of Texas in the Midwest. It's like, it's not for lack of try, but to cut through, it's the only thing that I know that I can go do and like get the money that I'm owed. Here's a contract. Here's how many tickets I sold. It's like the only concrete thing that we have left, which I keep telling Kyle, I'm like, maybe live touring now in the world of robots and AI, people are going to be like, we need live music. Okay. Maybe I've been training for this my whole life, but at the same time, I'm tired now. Like, I don't want to go at the pace that I was going. It's incredibly hard. I come home sometimes, Paul and I both from the road, looking like we've been in a fist fight, you know, cause it's exhausting. It's not easy. And someone told me the other day, even in a tour bus, like even in two tour buses, it's still super taxing on your body. So I love that you're creating something that has the potential to make us money that I don't have to leave my house to do.
Yeah, that's the idea was, okay, there's this service that used to exist where people would dig through all of the songs and find the good ones and then present them in an entertaining way. And for a while, DJs were making really good money doing it. And now it's all sort of corporate and nobody understands that radio can be a really cool thing because it's taken over by a couple giant companies that own them all and only spin major label record stuff.
At the same songs every 2 hours.
Totally. Yeah. It's sort of been like that algorithm has been taken and used for evil, but it doesn't mean the algorithm is bad. So what we're trying to do is take that algorithm and take something that musicians do already on the bus, playing songs for each other and saying, listen to this and digging through stuff and saying, well, maybe that's a way that musicians could get paid what they deserve.
So each artist has their own unique station and each one kind of has their own tone and theme. And we've kind of experimented with mine, which is really funny. I don't know if we're going to do it as much, but in the beginning it was very funny because it was like, Brie Bagwell band radio where we play girls back to back. Like, just like we really leaned into like the female on the radio.
I love it.
It was, it's so funny. And it's like, people immediately that, especially people that know me, like get the sarcasm. And, but then, you know, Reckless Kelly radio or Mickey Motorcars radio, those are all, or, now you have a bunch of new stations. How many artists do you have at the time of this recording?
There's 17 live. There's, I think, 4 or 5 in development now, and we're getting requests from people
to be on there.
To be on it, and wow. We're also having requests from listeners. We've got a waiting list to get into the app. So that's, and the reason that we cut it off is so that we can get everything. Like, if you let 10 people join and things aren't right, then you lose 8 of them. And it's really hard to get those back. So what we do is we let 10 people in, or we let 50 at this point in, and then we make change and we watch how they behave. And then if we see if we keep more or less than we did last time, we get the product right. And then we're going to open it up when we get to about 40% of people staying, which we're at 34.5%. So
it's incredible. I mean, I release it to my fan club members, and the feedback is that they just love it. Like, not like they're like, this is cool. I get texts and I'll screenshot them and send them to y'all, you know, occasionally, but it's like, people are obsessed with it. Like, it's really, I tell the stories behind the songs, and that's what you get at a live show. But there's people, if you think about people in Australia that are never going to get to come see a Brie Bagwell live show, maybe until I go there, putting that out there, then they can hear the stories behind songs. Or how many songs do I get to play a night? 18. How many songs are on my playlist station? Like 60 Brie Bagwell songs. So it's like, you get to hear the stories behind each one. So I think it's what people want, which at live shows too, sometimes you get people that say, I love the stories, and people that are like, shut up and sing, like, you never know. So the people that really like the behind the scenes, I think that this is the perfect thing for them. Like the real fans.
Oh, awesome. We've been surprised at how much it's taken off, how quickly. So we've just been trying to keep up with it.
Oh, for sure. So you're going to get advertisers. Is that how you're going to make the ads that are in there right now are very funny. I laugh at them.
I love those ads. They're just kind of the award-winning ads from the last 20 years or something like that. I just went and found the best ads I could.
They're amazing. But that's eventually how you will get. So if you want to advertise on Playola.
Oh, yeah.
It's not too soon. Get in now.
It is not too soon. Absolutely use advertisers. We could and volunteers. If you want to volunteer, you can go to the website. We've got a bunch of volunteers and a new volunteer coordinator that's doing a great job. Like, it's kind of become people want musicians to get paid. It's like, people are frustrated that their money is not going to the artist. And I think I thought that was some. When I came up with the idea, that was a negative. Like, everybody I talked to about raising money, they were like, well, you can't split it with the artist because the artist might pay for it. You don't know. So you have to figure out if the artist will pay for it first before we'll give you any money. And so that's kind of why we bootstrapped it, because I couldn't find anybody to give us. I had been taught to be sort of embarrassed and not say anything about the fact that we just want, like, it's all about artists making money. But now I'm like, all right, well, we've kind of got it figured out. So screw those people, and we'll just keep at it.
Well, I think we walk this line of, you know, whenever I tell people about it, it's like, I don't want people to think that I'm poor because they don't think I'm successful. And I'm not poor, and my gross is very high, but my net is $0. Like, because it's like, we make what we spend, and it's not, we spend what we make, and it's not enough ever. It's not even close. And it's not what it should be. For example, Sony owns my Schedule A. So Sony owns everything that I recorded until 2015. And when people find that out, they're like, blasphemy. How much is it going to cost to record your catalog? I want to write you a check. And you're like, wow, well, they would never say things like that if they didn't know that that's what's happening. Or the other day I shared my jukebox royalties. Okay, get this. 48 plays last month. And I made less than 10 cents. So, you know, to play a song on the jukebox, it's at least $1.
Yeah.
So that from $48, I got less than 10 cents. And people were like losing their minds on my Instagram, like replying to my story.
Oh, I was at, like, I want to find some documentary maker to just make, just tell, It's like all of these Nashville players, they're like protesting now because the it's gotten so bad. Yeah. And I was saying, I want them to just say, hey, I played on this song and here's how much I made. Because if they said that, people would be angry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Rachel's on the number one song right now. She made $300. And that's with like, that's with a team that is cool and cares.
And cares. And yeah. is going to probably list her on the credits of the song on Spotify and stuff. Where like a lot of these people, I think about that. You create this signature guitar lick for a song that's an iconic song and you make $300. Like, yeah. That's just as much as songwriting credit.
Totally. Like Rob McNally, who like defined a whole era of country music. And when you think about the songs, you think about the lick that he played. You don't think about the tagline.
Right.
And he made a few hundred bucks on all those songs.
Which is so wild because someone like me kind of takes advantage of that in terms of like we record all of our songs in one day in Nashville with the best players. But I feel like if you have worldwide success, then that should go up as a player. I mean, you would think, you know, or we squeeze all mine into half a day so I can like get these great guys. But that's wild to me that they're getting the same pay for a worldwide hit. That doesn't seem correct.
It's because it's just monopolistic practices. When they went from four labels to three labels, we were living there when that happened. And we kind of saw them go from, okay, it used to be you'd make four times, eight times master scale. And that's how everybody competed to get the best players was the multiple of master. So when they went from four major labels to three major labels, they just all said no more multiples of master scale. Everybody gets master scale and everybody's been. So now the most expensive drummer and the best drummer in Nashville and the worst drummer in Nashville make the same.
That's wild. And you know what's also wild? That now that they have the apps that create songs in 5 minutes, I counted. I got 9 Suno songs sent to me this week, pitched to me, and 5 of them were from people that are not songwriters.
No.
Everybody is just like, I can write songs now, and they send it to me. And I'm like, are you my dentist? No, I'm not. It's not my dentist. Taylor, it's not you. But like, it's so hilarious. You can like put words in and then everybody, you know, I can't go be a mechanic. I can't go be a Nashville A&R guy, but you can be a songwriter in an instant. And that, or, and now, you know, when I used to cut demos, when I was at Sony, we do a demo session in 30 minutes and those musicians were some of the most amazing musicians I ever worked with. And now like the AI for art, it's like, if it could get any harder
yeah,
for us.
I keep thinking it's got to get better from here and then it gets a little worse.
Right. We couldn't foresee that happening.
No. Rachel, when that happened, Rachel was like, why do they always take our jobs? Like, can't they make a dishwasher?
Yeah. Like, no kidding. Like, let's figure out how to change a diaper on a baby. Like,
yeah.
I know. It's a strange world, and I'm glad that we have one another to navigate it together with.
Yeah.
I think I was telling Rachel, like, our music, I talk about music couples therapy a lot in my podcast just because I think finding like-minded people is so important to go through this with.
I'm so refreshed by that every time we go. And people that have been through, because you can't really talk to, you can't really share it with somebody that hasn't been on the road because there's a lot of things that you just don't understand. But the main thing is they don't understand the difference between like how you can be successful and not make any money.
Right.
Like they everybody they go in. And so for me, it was like, well, I had to stop talking about any of that stress or anything because it was like, as soon as you start, it just gives them, it's like, no, you don't understand. Like I could go to a show and I could see 10,000 people singing all the words to my song, but I made $2,000 total on that song. And that was 3/4 of my song pay for the year. Like,
right.
That people don't understand that.
Yeah. Or even just my tires are $400 a piece on my RV. The other day I was like, I'm sorry, how much? Okay.
Oh my
great.
God.
I mean, we're talking like your expenses go up and then the more famous you get, or talking to Will about how much his bus costs. And it's like, I saw somebody the other day roll up in two tour buses and I was like, I wouldn't do that God, if I were you, because the longevity of this money. And, you know, at some point you don't want to be on the road. And then if you don't own your own music and you don't have a way to make money, then you're shifting and then you don't have your identity anymore. I mean, it's like even the best case scenario, I always say, like I saw a legendary act the other day. And someone was like, oh, so-and-so looks terrible. Like, the best case scenario, you can play until you're old. And then people are like, ugh, Brie Bagwell looks old and fat. Like, they're still trying to do it. Ugh. Like, that's like the best case scenario. Like, who wants to choose that?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, I mean, I always think about, like Taylor Swift is going to have she's going to peak. And then how heartbreaking is that when she when she has to go down to playing hockey stadiums? that is going to be heartbreak. It's going to be just as heartbreaking as going up to playing hockey stadiums and then coming back down to theaters or whatever, like maybe more.
Or what does she choose to peak and not play at all?
Yeah.
Then she doesn't ever get to play again. I mean, and you're talking about Taylor Swift. We're talking about the ultimate. It's so you don't get to go through your company, work for 40 years, retire, everyone throws you a party, and then you get, you know, retirement money and benefits forever, and it's just like the greatest, and you go out on top, and then you go live, you know, you wear your Jimmy Buffett shirts and go tour Margaritaville's all over the world. Like, you don't get to, that's not what happens in our business.
No, there's some heartbreak built in.
There's so much heartbreak.
There's so much heartbreak.
And it
oh my
keeps
God.
Coming. And that's why, like, you know, but you've told me a lot that is important to make art. And it's like, we are fighting the good fight. And there's some days that I come to Music Couples and I'm just so defeated. And some days I'm on top of the world and someone else in the group is so defeated. So maybe that's why it works, is because we can all help each other.
Yeah, I think so.
We need it.
It is so hard. Like, I mean, it really is. It's crazy.
And it's hard for our heroes. I mean, it's hard for the people that inspired me, but it's hard for you to release that record, but I need you to do it because it's important. You're a songwriter's songwriter's songwriter.
Aww.
Like, don't you think that about yourself?
Oh God, no. No.
You should think that about yourself.
I think every time I write a song that is good, I think, okay, it's over. I got lucky again, and now it's done.
What?
Totally.
I kind of think that too. Or sometimes I'll like, but mine's the other way, where I'm like, I can't get something good, and I'm like, I forgot how to do this. I always feel like songs are already. What helps me is I feel like songs are already there, and then it's my job to just kind of like put the pieces together.
Yeah.
That helps me a little bit.
Yeah.
Paul is not. He's not in the same thing of songs are. He's not as witchy as me or whatever. How do you feel about songs? Do you think that they're from the universe? Or are they from inside your brilliant mind?
I think they're kind of from the universe. And I think that I think that your job is to get your left brain out of the picture. And just feel it. And the more I feel like you learn all the mechanics of writing a song over the years and from writing hundreds and hundreds of songs. And then when you really write a good one, you're not thinking at all about the mechanics or what key it's in or what number that chord is or any of that. You're just like feeling it and letting it come out. And
yeah.
That's feels like the process for me is the main thing. Like the
that makes sense. Do you feel I'm going through this thing now where I don't know what's good anymore? Do you ever have that happen to you?
Oh gosh, yeah.
Like, I'm like, this could be the worst song or it could be the best song, which is kind of why I have to have, you know, I rely on Rachel a lot for that as a sounding board of like, is this total trash?
Oh yeah, because you're too close to it. To me, it's cheesy, but it's like, to me, writing a song is like you have this feeling and you're making this box to put the feeling in, and then you give the box to other people and they open it. And if it's a good song, then they feel exactly what you felt or more. And if it's not a good song, then they don't feel anything. Like, it all leaked out on the way to them. And so to me, it's like when you open the box, you usually feel what you felt at the time because you felt it in the first place. And then, but the question is like whether other people can feel it. And then there's all these tricks for getting them to feel it. But to me, that's why AI is never really gonna work, because it is just about the box and not about what's inside of the box. Sometimes it gets lucky and it accidentally gets a little bit of things that were inside of all the things that it stole from to make that box. And there's enough there that you feel something, but that's just luck. It's never like, it doesn't have a feeling to put inside of this thing. It's just...
Yeah, I love that, because I did hear Asuna's song that was like, I think she kind of had kind of a, you know, like a Heather Morgan, Leanne Womack kind of voice, where it was really a beautiful voice.
Uh-huh.
It was still not good. It sounded great. It was still just not right. But the person that sent it probably was like, wow, this is amazing. And that's what I wonder about, you know, with radio and what I think you're kind of championing, which makes somebody like me very happy, because sometimes the music that's coming out of the big labels is less than, like, there's a lot of really good stuff coming out of Nashville right now, but there was a period where it was just the box for me and there was nothing, but it was the repetition, I think, of the radio.
Oh yeah. Or yeah.
Something, right?
No, absolutely. Like they, in the early 2000s, they realized that, okay, if we have this radio algorithm that just makes things popular, and we could put any kind of crap through it that we want to, as long as we box everything out that's great, we can put our cheap product in there and it'll be great. And so I just think that's a giant part of it, is that, like, we've had 20 years. These kids have grown up entirely in this system that's just made to feed you stuff is not very good.
Yeah. And I don't know how to, you know, even if I was going to try to write something that just sounded like a hit, I don't know how to do that. I never figured that out. And I was wondering, because when I had my publishing deal, I remember them saying, like, okay, tractor songs are, like, everyone go write a tractor song, because that was like a big deal. And I wrote a tractor song called Dear John Deere. But, like, I remember looking around and thinking, none of these people have even seen a tractor.
Totally.
And then today I was like, I wonder if that's what happened with you with I'll Sing About Mine. Was that we probably wrote those around the same time.
Yes.
When it was like, you better write a tractor song. And then here comes the radio and it was just like, tractors. And it's like, what?
Yeah, that was me and Adam. We got together to write, and I think earlier in the day he had written with a rich guy that wanted to write about being poor, grown up poor, and I had written with a girl that grew up in New York or something that wanted to write about growing up in a small town, and they both mentioned wanting to write tractor songs, and so then we wrote that instead.
Wow. Came a huge hit for Josh Abbott. I love that song. I love Adam Hood's version of that song. I love your version of that song. And then the other song I heard the other day, and I was like, I was singing every word, because anyway, Corey Morrow was like, you're singing every word. I'm like, that's a Brian Keene song. Grow Old With You.
We wrote that together. Yeah.
You wrote that with Corey?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That was really fun.
Well, I told him that was a Brian Keene song and he laughed.
Oh.
So it's because you wrote it together.
Yeah. Totally.
Great. That makes sense now.
Oh, okay. No, that's great. That's
and then
great.
You wrote some
he
Randy's.
He will love that. Too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he did laugh, like he knew. He thought I was joking.
He's
so we'll just let him
guy.
Think. Corey Morrow, he has a Playlist Station now. Or he's going
to?
Yeah,
he does. Okay. He does. Great. He's live.
Good. He's really, really a great man. And then what are a couple of the Randy songs that you've written for my guitar player who's listening, who's a big old Randy fan?
I don't have hits because I've got standards.
Standards.
That was really fun.
That is great, and you're just such a great songwriter, and I just love being your friend, and thanks for letting me come to your house. Do you want to talk? I asked Rachel about her Mexico experience, but before we leave, I want to hear about your Mexico experience, because I forget that this is going to come out at different times, but one day Rachel and Brian just said, we're moving to Mexico for 6 months, and Paul Eason and I were like, we can't be friends anymore, because we were so jealous of you guys. And equally as happy as we were jealous for you, which is a lot. But that to me is like the epitome of you and Rachel are always very open about where you are in your life and what's going on. And like you are like, let's just go to Mexico. Or like, this is unfair for artists. Let's just create our own app. Like you're very like aware of the problems and you're not like you were having problems. That's not what I mean. But like, you're aware of like, oh, we need a change. Let's go to Mexico for 6 months. Like,
yeah.
What did that look like and how did that come about? And like, what an amazing experience.
It was awesome. We went to, we took the kids on like a regular vacation and at some point, me and Rachel just kind of looked at each other and we were like, I don't think we should do this again because it's so much pressure. Like you spend all this money and there's all this pressure to have fun in 4 days or whatever.
Yeah.
And
take a picture for Instagram. Smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had just gotten at my job. They just put me as in the head of a team of Argentinians. And they were all speaking English for me, but they were super stressed out speaking English. And now they speak great English. But at the time, they were just getting started. And I remember I went to a meeting late, and they were all speaking Spanish, and they were super relaxed and super cool, making jokes and stuff. And so I was like, okay, somebody just translate for me, and y'all stay in Spanish. And then talked to Rachel on that vacation. We were just like, what if we just moved to, originally we wanted to move to Puerto Rico. But then we got some advice that, that for the work we were doing and stuff, Mexico might be better. So we moved down to Mexico for 6 months, took our three kids, put them in school down there. No English.
Amazing.
They hated us so much. The kids hated us so much. But yeah, it was great. It was the hardest thing I think I've ever done. Because it was 10 times harder than I expected it to be.
Yeah. But that's the way to do it, is just go dive in. And I remember you told me, you were like, I think the thing is when people start talking, I just nod. If they talk too fast, I just say nod and say, oh, see.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Act like you know what they're saying.
Oh, that was...
goes a long way.
The, like, lying with my face, that was really hard. It's really... I'm a terrible liar.
Yeah.
And so
I could see that about you.
It was like... I would show them that I wasn't understanding, and there's like, and everything stops, and then they spend like 5 minutes getting you to understand. But in reality, if the conversation goes on, you just kind of figure it out a little bit later, and then you figure out what was being talked about before. So if you want to learn, you kind of have to pretend that you're understanding, but it's horrifying. It's so scary.
And I even know enough Spanish where I feel, and then I go down to Mexico and then I'll speak a little and then people will go 90 miles an hour yeah. Right back at me, and I would be like, oh no, like I'm almost as possible, because you sound fluent but you're not fluent.
Oh yeah,
I'm not at all fluent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fluent is my friend says fluent is a moving target. Fluency is a moving target, because you get... I'm sure if you heard yourself a year ago, 2 years ago, you would be really happy.
Yeah.
But the further you get... I mean, I'm at a crazy frustrating level. I guess I'm in the middle of B1 right now, and it's so frustrating because I can have conversations, but not interesting conversations.
Or what about if you talk to somebody in Mexico? I told Paul this. Like, I almost never use real English. I am constantly talking in crazy voices or slang, or like I'll be like, you like, what if someone is talking in Spanish the way that I talk in English? I would never understand what they're saying.
I think that's Puerto Rico,
right?
Because it, like, the first 2 days in Puerto Rico, whenever we go, I can't understand anything, and then like the third day I can get by.
Or like me and Paul all the time are like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, you're not going, you know what I'm saying. So it's like, if people do anything that like I do in English, I have no chance. So we have to give ourselves a little bit of a break, because it is not Duolingo talking slowly. It's not like that in my life.
No, it's so funny. It's like, I thought it was like you hit a point and then you understand.
Yeah.
And then instead it's like, you start out in this fog and you can't see anything, and then you get to where you could see a little bit, and then you could see more. Now I can see like 70%.
Yeah.
Only being able to see 70% is still frustrating.
And you're not practicing every day. Like,
no.
Yeah, I know. Okay, well, what is your hope for Playola in terms of if people are listening, you need to get on the app or get on the waiting list, but your hope... Here, let me tell you what your hope is. I was like, what is your hope? Let me tell you what
please,
it is.
Please, please.
It was really fun to hear you talk about your hope, wanting that to be our like side hustle as artists that pays us substantially. And I think that is so like a Brian Keene move, to where it's, you know, it's really smart. It's really cool, but it's very selfless. Like, you're doing all of this work to help your friends, kind of.
Well, it is, but it's, I mean, that's, my heart is there, but also to have the brutal business side, it's really good business to have. For me, it's all about having all of the interest aligned. So like, what the artist does is good for the business, and what the business does is good for the artist. And then if we have like open source where developers could build stuff on the outside, it's like, well, we want, if they build something good, we want that to be in their best interest. So it's all about aligning all the interests. So it's not like totally altruistic, but that's definitely my dream, is that like, the dream of the whole thing is that we can stop all of y'all having to be excellent at what you do, kill it, get successful, and then also on the side, find a way to make a living at the same time.
Or think about, how many radio tours did you go on? I went on
a zillion.
Yeah. And I went on two big ones. The first time I did 60 stations in 6 weeks. And this is when I was also playing shows on the road.
Oh.
And then I would go, and those were the first two big mental breakdowns of my life happened, because it was Sunday. Whenever I get home, I'd drop the band off on Sunday, and then I'd drive to wherever I had to be Monday morning, and then I would do radio Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then go back out on the road Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and do that for 6 weeks. And I was just like driving by myself to all of these places across Texas. Like, that doesn't, you don't do that. People don't do that anymore. And you did it. It's brutal.
It's totally brutal.
And you're
totally
there for like brutal. 15 minutes. And I don't know if you experienced this, but my first radio tour, people kind of don't, they're like, she won't be back.
Oh, yeah.
They like dismiss you.
Yeah.
Now I'm all best friends with all the radio DJs or whatever, but I don't have to go see them anymore. But like, that was a real, like, I wish this would have been around.
Oh, I remember Craig Vaughn, who's working with us now. I remember my first radio tour, it being rough and being just dismissed everywhere. And then Craig being so sweet, and he'd listen to the record, and he's like,
play the whole record,
into the music. Yeah,
but you drove 12 hours to get to Amarillo for him to do that.
Totally.
Texas is so
big.
I slept
in the back of a little Subaru station wagon, that I an old like early 90s Subaru station wagon that I did that whole tour in.
Paul did a radio tour in, I can't remember, a Sabre. Is a Sabre a car? Anyway, he's gonna kill me. Anyway, it was some sort of big car.
Okay.
Like, not, you know, whatever. And he slept in there.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that was, I didn't do that, but I couldn't, 'cause I'm a chick. But that was how we did it in the old days to go get played on radio.
It was old days. Yeah.
That's wild.
Totally wild.
Kyle, and thinks we don't have to do that. You're like doing it. He's doing it, actually. He's still driving around.
That was it feels like that was the end of like an era where you could do that. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can do it now, but it's harder, it feels like.
It's so much harder. So thanks for trying to level the playing field for those of us that just, man, I don't want to drive 12 hours to do 15 minutes on radio anymore.
For sure.
Boy, do I not. And I don't. So thank you, everyone, for still playing my music. And get on Playola. I don't have to drive anywhere for Playola. Maybe that's my new station's tagline.
I don't have to drive anywhere?
I don't have to drive anywhere for you to listen to this station. I do it from, I'm in my bedroom petting my dog. Enjoy. Is that it?
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much. I'm just... you're such an amazing songwriter and person. You're so kind. I don't think I've ever seen you without a smile on your face. I have yet to.
It happens. It happens more often with the running a startup than it did before.
Yeah. Well, it's very cool. And you can also like build, I've seen you build a deck. I've seen you be a great dad. I've seen you write great songs. And now I can't wait to celebrate your new record that's coming out, because selfishly, that's what I want. We're going to get someone to write a Playola check that's going to cover all the mixing and a Playola sponsorship. Email Brian at playolafm.com. Is that right?
It is playola.fm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Something like that. Thanks for joining me, friend.
Thank Appreciate you. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Adios.
It sure is good to see you. It's been a long, long while. Must be 6 or 7 years now since I last saw you smile. And now there's gray hair at my temples, and there's new lines on your face. But under bar lights, we still look the same. Last time that I saw you, there was a hardness in your eyes, and our warm hellos are giving way to half-hearted goodbyes. I said I never cared to see you while the sun was in my eyes, but under bar lights, I can't remember why. Under bar lights, it's only good to see. Couple beers under bar lights. The past is oh so simple, and all them scrapes and scars, they just disappear.